Hi, it is 5 o'clock and you are listening to CFRC 101.9, streaming on the web at cfrc.ca. We are broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Welcome to Radio 613.
Hello and welcome to Radio 613 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. It is a brand new show here, live in studio, and it's a very special show for a couple reasons. Today we are going to be celebrating the Jewish holiday of Tu B'Shvat, and it's also CFRC's annual funding drive.
Yeah, and we also have the full collective on air tonight, which is a seemingly more common occurrence. So I'm Malka.
And I'm Avi.
Sean here.
So we're happy to all be here to talk about Tu B'Shvat and to request your generous donations for the CFRC, annual CFRC funding drive. So that's the show for tonight. For those of you who want to know, Tu B'Shvat is a Jewish holiday. It starts next Sunday evening and ends at sundown on Monday. And it's the new year for the trees. So basically, it's a holiday that focuses on trees. And so we're going to be talking about various aspects of the holiday contemporarily and how we practice it religiously and spiritually on the show today, and hearing some good music and chatting, and hoping that your calls with money will be coming in.
Mm-hmm. So the number to call here is 613-533-CFRC. You can also get all the information online, cfrc.ca, and you can get a tax deduction.
Yeah, a charitable receipt. Yeah,
or a number of prizes, including gifts for local stores, including our favorite Pasta Genova, which has best basil in town.
Best basil and best olives.
That's right.
And very good focaccia that can be a substitute for challah on Shabbat.
Only in Kingston.
Yeah, exactly.
Only in Kingston. Oink.
Exactly. Yeah. Sean, did you want to, before we play that, the Tu B'Shvat cartoon, did you want to have anything to say about Tu B'Shvat in general? I know we're going to get into the holiday a little later.
I don't know. I just found the clip on YouTube. I thought it was funny. The cartoons sort of set up for kids, and it's supposed to be a lesson about Tu B'Shvat and why it's important, and talking about trees and talking about the environment and making the links, sort of, I guess, linking back the tradition of Tu B'Shvat in the, like, Rabbi Luria times, talking about the environment as a whole and trying to remember Tu B'Shvat as an environment, Jewish environmental holiday, essentially.
Okay, so this is a clip. It's from an online cartoon called The Nice Jewish Time Traveler.
Hello and welcome to The Nice Jewish Time Traveler, where we ask, if not now, when? Today we're going to explore the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, the new year of the trees. For hundreds of years we've been celebrating this day by planting trees and eating fruits. But how will we celebrate Tu B'Shvat hundreds of years from now? I thought it might be nice to take a look at Tu B'Shvat in the year 2525. Let's check it out. Whoa, what a ride. Excuse me, sir. Where can we find some 26th century Tu B'Shvat festivities?
Festivities? Are you Meshuggah? Tu B'Shvat is a day of mourning.
I'm afraid you're mistaken. Tu B'Shvat is
No, you're mistaken. Tu B'Shvat is the new year of the trees. All of the trees on the planet have long since been cut down and wasted by past generations who took them for granted.
No trees?
Now that the trees aren't removing carbon dioxide from the air, the effects of global warming have sunk Florida. Where's an old Jewish retiree like me supposed to live?
I guess the tradition of eating fruits on Tu B'Shvat...
Fruits! Fruits! Times are so tough that some rabbis are accepting Soylent Green as kosher.
Is there anything previous generations can do to save trees and avoid this fate?
Planting trees is great. But the real trick is to save trees by knowing what to buy. When remodeling your home, use substitute materials or reclaimed wood. If you must use real wood, make sure it is certified that they were grown on tree farms instead of natural forests. Buy recycled office paper for your printers and fax machines. Make sure that the throwaway products you buy, like napkins and paper towels, are made from recycled material. We shouldn't have to waste trees just to blow our noses. And don't forget to bring your own bag to the grocery store.
Great ideas. I'm going to go back to my era and get the word out.
Well, zai gesund.
Okay, the nice Jewish time traveler. How's that for a segment?
I thought it was really funny because that the comment about Soylent Green, which I don't think most people remember what that's about, but there was like this old science fiction movie from the late 60s or early 70s where basically these people lived in the post-apocalyptic society and they were fed the dead people back to them in this like stew called Soylent Green. So it was kind of a funny comment.
So that's that who was the Jewish time traveler talking to?
Were you listening to the question?
I got distracted.
The Jewish time traveler was talking to a future old person,
right,
about how in the future they celebrate Tu B'Shvat.
Okay.
And the old man says that it's actually the day of mourning because there are no trees left.
And he says they even consider this science fiction human flesh food to be kosher because they have no other options left. That's the joke.
Like the fruit equivalent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I kind of crushed that joke. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, I guess that, you know, that clip was humorous, so we thought we'd share it with you, but also, you know, sort of gets to, you know, one of the most important aspects of Tu B'Shvat, which is that it is a celebration of trees and therefore, you know, a celebration of the environment and a holiday on which, you know, Jews are supposed to, you know, revere God through their, you know, reverence for creation and the environment and trees. So,
yeah, I took it as like it's not just trees too, but everything else, but the trees are sort of the, I guess, the largest feature in many landscapes, and the largest, like, I guess, green thing that grows on the earth. So, but also lots of other stuff, lots of things I want to talk about, grasses and all the other types of growing matter.
Right, yeah.
And its importance in making the world a habitable place. So if we didn't have those things in the way that they, in an extremely complex way, the way that they all work together with all of the other animals and insects and things even smaller than that, then we wouldn't be able to live here.
Mm-hmm. I just thought we should maybe mention the origins of the holiday and then before we move on. And also just marking the date, Tu B'Shvat being literally meaning the 15th day of the month of Shvat, which is the month we're in now. And so that marking the new year of the trees as the new cycle comes in. And then the origins of the holiday itself can be drawn to the Talmudic period.
Well, yeah, and I guess also about, like, in Deuteronomy, there's a 14:22-23. It's like every year you should set aside a tenth part of the yield so that you may learn to revere Hashem forever.
Yeah, so in Torah, there's the law that, you know, one is supposed to put aside a tenth of their yield, you know, so like the from farming their harvest. And, you know, like, I think at times it says to the temple, and there are interpretations that say that it's for the poor to eat. Regardless, you are supposed to, you know, give put that part aside. And in the Talmud, there is the sort of decision that Tu B'Shvat is the day on which that cycle of the year begins and ends. And so in Judaism, there are actually four new years. You know, the famous one is Rosh Hashanah, which is the, you know, regular new year, which is when the Jewish calendar starts. And then the first of Nisan and the first day of Elul are also New Year's. And Tu B'Shvat, which is the 15th of Shavat, as Avi just told us, is also a New Year, the New Year for the trees. And I was hearing a rabbi on YouTube talk about Tu B'Shvat. And, you know, one thing he said, which I thought was interesting, is like, you know, people are going to wonder, well, how can you have so many New Years? And he gave a sort of easy secular analogy of what many different New Years are in secular life. Your birthday is a New Year. January 1st is the New Year for the calendar. You know, birthday is a New Year for your life. You know, there's a fiscal New Year, and there's the New Year for your employment contract, and there are all sorts of New Years in all kinds of life, and so in all kinds of aspects of secular life. And so in Jewish life, there are four New Years. And Tu B'Shvat is the New Year for the trees, if you hadn't gotten it by now.
I think it's also like an agrarian, it comes out of the agrarian tradition, the more indigenous roots of Judaism being around food. And, you know, setting aside a tenth of your harvest is like so that people who are in one way or another become excluded from the agrarian tradition are able to live. Because there's one thing that, as much as, like, you know, civilization as we can talk about, as much building up great cities and things like that, if we don't eat, we'll die. And that, no matter what we do, no matter what kind of technology, that's one thing that you can't get away from. And so Tu B'Shvat is about understanding that, you know, food and also the environment, the air, everything is related to creation and these living things in creation that are somewhat set apart from us. And we think that, you know, sometimes if the head gets too strong, you think that you're not part of that. But really, it's about a time of, like, I guess, cutting down one's ego to understand that, like, the other little things, the things we might take for granted, these little living things are actually, you know, more important than your own individual, like, you know, mental prowess or whatever. Because if you don't have them, you'll die. And you are limited to that. You are limited to live. You have to have these things.
On that note, I'd like to share a short reading taken from the book Wisdom of the Jewish Mystics. So here goes. Once when Rav Kook was walking in the fields, lost deep in thought, the young student with him inadvertently plucked a leaf off a branch. Rav Kook was visibly shaken by this act, and turning to his companion, he said gently, "Believe me when I tell you that I never simply pluck a leaf or a blade of grass or any living thing unless I have to. Every part of the vegetable world is singing a song and breathing forth a secret of the divine mystery of the creation." The words of Rav Kook penetrated deeply into the mind of the young student. For the first time, he understood what it means to show compassion to all creatures. So a short reading from the book Wisdom of the Jewish Mystics, from page 80.
Boutique and a swinging hat spa. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you got till it's gone. They pay paradise and they put up a parking lot. Took all the trees, put them in a tree.
as you're ever reflecting on and enjoying the Joni Mitchell greatness, remember to call in CFRC 533-2372 to donate to your campus and community radio station. We need your pledge now. Okay, so thank you, Joni Mitchell. I always thought that song was Paved Paradise. What is it called?
Big Yellow Taxi.
Big Yellow Taxi. Or, also Big Yellow...
Bulldozer?
Bulldozer, thank you. So we got a pledge. We're super excited, bouncing in our seats.
Mazel tov to us.
Mazel tov to us.
And the station.
And mazel tov to CFRC for... hosting us and tons of great programming. So the pledge came from my lovely sister in Ottawa, Laura. Laura, thank you so much for supporting campus and community radio. I know that when you were doing your master's in Hartford, Connecticut, that you also did a campus and community radio show, and you used to talk about waking up super early in the morning to get to the radio station by like 5 a.m. or something to do your show about your classical music show, and you got involved in doing the research for the show, which led you to do some research for CBC radio show. So, you know, campus and community radio is such a great opportunity for people to explore and share things that they are passionate about. My sister's show, you know, she got to share her deep knowledge of music and different ways and explore new stuff and new recordings. And lots of people do that on their music shows. And on Radio 613, I'm so happy to have a forum in which to discuss Jewish ideas that I am interested in exploring and sharing with, you know, my friends and my family and the listeners. So it's such a wonderful opportunity for programmers, and obviously for listeners on the other end. You know, I've been listening to CFRC since I started at Queens. You know, I don't know how many years ago, more than I like to say. And you know, great venue for stuff that you don't hear on commercial radio, you know, commentary and music that you're just not finding when you're flicking through the other radio stations. So, you know, if you're new to CFRC, I encourage you during this funding drive week to take the opportunity to listen to the gamut of shows that is played on air. And moreover, call in 533-CFR3 and make your donation. So from that note, maybe we'll turn back a little bit towards our secondary theme of the show, which is Tu B'Shvat, the Jewish New Year for the trees. In our little cartoon clip that we played, the nice Jewish time traveler talked about, you know, some of the ways that we can preserve and honor the earth, and he talked about, you know, some what I would consider shallow sort of consumer environmentalism, you know, related to buying more environmentally friendly building materials when you do your renovations, and more, you know, and reducing your use of plastics and stuff like that. And I would never
criticize those tactics, and I think it's important, you know, the recycling and the reduction and, you know, the three R's of environmentalism. But I think that one thing that's special about Tu Bishvat, which was not explored in that little, you know, 2.5 minute cartoon clip, was that there's a lot of really deep environmentalist stuff. And, you know, it goes further than reduction and reuse and recycling to, you know, our connection to the earth and our unbreakable connection to all of living things and to creation and the compassion and reverence that we must have towards it. So I think that
things I would say about that too, a critique I have with consumer environmentalism, I think, is an important piece of the puzzle, because you can make, through consumer environmentalism, you can have an impact on a large amount of people, because people are hooked into the consumer network, which is massive and everyone's a part of for the most part. But one of the things I think about this connection you were talking about is some of the environmentalism, we should focus on the fact that that connection has actually been broken. Especially in the West, most people's connections with the environment are broken. Most people don't even know, don't have a relationship with the land and with trees to even defend them. So, and a lot of times, because of people have been sort of gradually moved out of rural areas and into urban areas, people don't have a connection with trees. They don't have a connection with the environment in the way that they used to in an agrarian context. So they don't even know when those rural areas are being destroyed. And, you know, it's like, it's interesting. I was reading somewhere where it was like a Jewish tradition to go out and sort of have a one-on-one dialogue with like Hashem once a day for 1 hour. And it was supposed to happen in a forest. And I'm not sure what it's called, but I know I read about that. And I think, I wonder how many people, you know, practicing are in cities and don't even have the opportunity to do that. And it's like, you think if you went out to that forest, if it was getting cut down, you know, you would want to defend that, right? And if everyone did have a connection with something like that, then there would be more defense of what's going on. But because we don't live anywhere near it, it's kind of impossible for people to know when it's even happening. That seems to me part of the issue around trying to have an environmental protection mindset, that people are just so distanced from it, they don't even know where to start. And so I guess a lot of things I think are important are reconnecting with the environment on a real personal level locally, and like know what is around so that you even know when it does get cut down. So when it is going to get cut down, you can do something about it. You can try and defend those spaces that are going to be taken out by, you know, some frivolous development, you know? So mm-hmm.
Definitely.
As much as you said you didn't want to critique those tactics, we've both done, I think, a good critique. And I just want to add my critique, because sort of this green capitalism is something that I also, green capitalism actually is something I concern myself a lot with, is this idea we can sort of buy ourselves out of the environmental disaster that we're not only heading towards, but really at now. And that connection that you're talking about required to stop this disaster, really I don't see it being solved through the wallet, not only on a practical level of really we're just consuming more rather than looking at what consumption means, but feeling good about what you buy, I don't think brings about that really deep shift that we are looking for. It can make you feel, you can feel good and more ethical to buy post-consumer waste, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that what you were saying, Malka, about Tu Bishvat's reminder to establish connections on a physical level and a spiritual level goes a lot farther than just buying a certain product, and that to me at least can't be achieved simply through buying something in a different way.
I think like it took a lot more than just buying stuff in supermarkets to deforest most of the world and destroy the environment. So how would it make sense that by buying something else in a supermarket that we're going to be able to, like, you know, set things right? I mean, there was a massive process of industrialization that the West doesn't know anything about anymore. The average person has not been a process in part of that industrialization process, because it took place in our grandparents' generation, especially college-age people. You know, so, I mean, like, if you could think of the kind of process where everyone worked as hard as they did in the industrialization phase towards rebuilding the environment, you know, like, that's, to me, that's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of work we're in for if we're really serious about this. This isn't a joke. This isn't something we can change the products we buy at the supermarket. This is a massive undertaking, and you know, part of it is, like, part of it is bringing down, like, the will to actually go and do that, and is thinking about why it's important. And, you know, from a religious perspective, from a, you know, a perspective of just living and surviving, you know, make it right in your mind that this is something you have to do, and then start to, like, bring down the actual ability to do it, and to try and figure out ways to, that it can be done. And a lot of them are also, at this point, not necessarily going to make everyone all that happy with you, I think, too, which is something else. But sometimes not being the most popular for your beliefs is not the most important thing. It's, you know, actually trying to change what is going on.
Yeah, and I think one other really important element of having the urgency and of thinking on a deep level about this, and I think this is one of the things of having that a new year for the trees really brings about that urgency. I mean, we can't go a year without thinking about it. This is the whole idea, is that sometimes it requires being, that connection needs to be reestablished, especially in terms of our positionality here in the West, but especially as settlers in the West, is the fact that a lot of times the effects of the Western industrial production is really the effects of which are felt most strongly by the poor, people of color, people either on the other side of the world, as far as the way companies outsource exploitation of the land, but also here, Turtle Island, the way we see such a high proportion of toxic waste and dirty water and exploitation of the land, especially by, like, mining companies and that sort of thing, and having a severe effect on indigenous land. So, you know, especially coming from different points, and also, you know, just working in poor communities and or communities of color as well. So, you know, speaking for myself from specific points of privilege, I really appreciate the fact that there is this time that once a year, or, you know, it can be, as you said, every day, to really have that urgency to situate yourself within the environment and recognize where you sit and where others might sit too, and where this environmental degradation is being felt.
And a lot of people don't talk about it, but I mean, and you can go through province by province and just look it up on Google. There are indigenous people in every province, in several places, at this moment, fighting massive corporations and logging campaigns that are basically deforesting what's left of what used to be, you know, majestic forests that cover this entire continent. And what is left of them is in rural places where mostly indigenous people live. And most people don't want to, like, it's sort of the ostrich in the head in the sand thing. You know, it's only a Google click away to figure out, like, what is going on. And, you know, I mean, maybe right now the only thing you can do about that is, like, you know, write a letter to your MP or your MPP or whatever, if that's what you feel comfortable with. But, you know, a couple more Google clicks away, you'll find lots of people doing other things about it as well. I mean, it's out there. Look for it. Tu Bishvat is New Year for the trees. And the story for this year, as it's been the story, I think, for the last 100 years, is that we're killing all the trees. And they're not going to be any left soon.
Mm-hmm. And one of the places where you can hear, instead of Googling, you can also radio. Don't forget, Sean, that you can tune in to CFRC 101.9 and hear about these issues. You know, like a few weeks ago on another show I was working on, we had on some people from the Barrier Lake community, Algonquin community, talking about the fact that settler companies continue to log on their traditional land and the forms of resistance that they're engaging in, and the settler solidarity work that people are doing as well. So you can tune in to CFRC, and you need to support that forum so you don't have to always be Googling. So call in, and we just got a $20 pledge, so thank you for this anonymous donor, and and keep supporting community radio so you don't always have to Google to get your information, because it's really...
And where else are you going to hear people as crazy as us on the radio? I mean, that's the most important thing to remember, I think.
Yeah. I think when I was listening to you, Sean, and Avi talk in the past few minutes, I was thinking about my own sort of minimal Jewish education around Tu B'Shvat, and I was thinking about the failure of that education in the context that you were describing, because, you know, I certainly remember as a kid and experienced as an educator in a Jewish educational setting, teaching young children about the value of trees and the value of the environment, and talking about things like shade and beauty, and, you know, how trees provide housing for animals, and how trees clean the air and provide fruit and nuts for, you know, human consumption and animal consumption, and how, you know, the roots of trees. And this is a big sort of metaphor that I remember, you know, talking about in a Jewish context, how the roots of trees prevent the erosion of the soil. But like all this stuff, I think in Jewish educational contexts is taught to children in a sort of disingenuous context in which like that sort of true pragmatic as well as spiritual and religious connection to trees and to the environment is, you know, as we've been saying, sort of truly, really, really lacking, if not non-existent. And so, you know, I think whenever in educational context you're trying to teach your kids, when we're trying to teach our kids something that, you know, we're not practicing and we're not engaged in, it's not really going to work. So
kids are smarter than that. They always know when you're like trying to pass something off that you're not doing. It's one of their biggest skills, I find.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that it's not hard to teach these kids that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, it appeals to children, and they are able to connect with it, but then it's not sustained because there's no sort of continued reinforcement, and like nobody else seems to care and is not picking up on it, and they have to care about all these other things all of a sudden, you know? So I think that, you know, in that situation, there's just like one sort of puzzle piece missing in a way, even though it's like a huge puzzle piece. So, yeah. I just wanted to share that. And I guess, you know, maybe it can bring us towards, did you want to say something? It can bring us towards some of the other things that are taught about Tu B'Shvat in Jewish contexts, and that are often thought about Tu B'Shvat, which are problematic.
Yeah, and I think I'll take that opportunity to do my own sort of little bit of cathartic discussion about shortcomings in my formal Jewish education around Tu B'Shvat, and the fact that, again, a bit of a missed opportunity to talk about what could be a great holiday, a meaningful holiday for kids, but myself and probably many others, the holiday is put in a context around the Israel, not the people Israel, but the state of Israel, specifically around the work of the JNF or Jewish National Fund. And, I'm quite sure I remember activities being geared towards raising money for the JNF and talking about, you know, we'll do this here and it will raise money and then a tree will get planted in Israel. And there are a few, you know, problems with that. The fact that this is not sort of really truly brought home in a meaningful way, and the fact that, you know, we need these, as we've talked about throughout the show, these trees to be planted locally and to be concerned about our environment locally and also globally, but also that the Jewish National Fund itself has problems on an ethical level and even on an environmental level. And we can talk about specifically what Canada Park has done, which is a park that the JNF has developed in Israel-Palestine with funds from Canadians. And the park itself is built on land that was annexed post-1967 war, and the result of which was, of that war, was that three Palestinian villages in the West Bank were, the villagers of which were driven out by the Israeli military. And this is highly documented, including IDF soldiers who resisted this and wrote about their resistance. So we're talking about the villages of Inwas, Yalu, and Beit Nuba, and around 10,000 villagers. And so this process of annexation was expedited by the work of the JNF, who built, planted trees over top of the now raised Palestinian villages. And you can see videos and reports of this very surreal park that's attempting to really eliminate Palestinian history by turning it into a park and planting trees. But you can see parts of houses and the village jutting out from the in really odd places. And it's really, you know, something that's, the trees really didn't do it all. And so although the signage and the official tours around Canada Park don't talk about this history, it's quite evident. It's there. And a lot of the refugees from those villages now live in refugee camps in Jordan and elsewhere. And actually Beit Nuba, that third village, is just outside of Canada Park, but is now an Israeli settlement. So again, a missed opportunity, as you said, Maka, and not necessarily what we envision trees being used for. Not life nourishing, but life destroying, perhaps.
I think also it's with Israel, if we have Israel completely covered in trees and the rest of the world is like being completely deforested and turning into a toxic waste dump, it's not really going to make much of a difference for the humans on the planet. That's one of the issues I thought about with Tu B'Shvat and the constant sort of sending of money for trees in Israel. It's like, well, you live in a place that, from all intents and purposes, that most people don't plan to leave. The diasporic elements aren't going anywhere. So it's but you're not going to plant trees in the area where you are. So, I mean, to me, it's one of those issues, you know, carbon dioxide, you know, gets turned into oxygen by trees and, you know, Israel could be a veritable tree palace, and it's not going to make any difference because the world's still dying. So the issue is really about everybody where they are putting more time and effort into doing it. And I mean, I was impressed to see, you know, that there was a plan to plant a million trees in New York City last year, which I thought was really good. I mean, these people have the ability to try and get more trees planted in their municipalities, and they live in the country, And, you know, also, I mean, we didn't talk about it, but there's a way to plant trees that is good, and there are a way to plant trees that are bad. I mean, trees are inert. They don't know what they're doing. And when you introduce them artificially, they can grow in ways that are less and more effective. And so there's also issues of stewardship that need to be brought to the forefront as well. Again, I'm not an expert on that, so I can't really speak at length. But I do know that the main issue for me is that it's a lot easier to plant trees where we all are, and we're all over the world. So planting trees everywhere, I think, is an important thing if you think in terms of trying to actually, you know, stop the destruction of the environment, but also renewal, you know, growing back.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you're saying, and, you know, I'm working to feature on our show next week an interview with some people who've been working in the States, some activists in the States who've been working around promoting tree planting and specifically fruit trees in urban areas, and sort of, I think, been involved in some sort of guerrilla fruit tree planting. So, you know, hopefully we'll get to talk to some of those folks next week. Just wanted to, you know, pop quickly back to the sort of Jewish National Fund relationship with Tu B'Shvat, because it's something that I've personally been feeling like really angry about for a number of years now. The Jewish National Fund, in all Jewish institutions, like educational institutions, there's this huge campaign to get kids to raise money and plant trees in Israel. And I think when I was a kid, it cost $18, which is high, to plant a tree in Israel, you know, and it's just the irony that's like dripping with
a tree costs like $1.20 at most, maybe even less.
Right. So it's just like dripping with, you know, violent irony, basically. You know, from my perspective, the Jewish National Fund has totally co-opted Tu B'Shvat, which is a meaningful and beautiful religious holiday, the religious and spiritual significance of which could be like explored at length and in depth, you know, forever, and which has been explored for, you know, centuries and centuries. And basically the holiday, from my, you know, limited observations in specifically in North American mainstream Jewish educational context, has been totally co-opted by the Jewish National Fund, used as part of a sort of like terra nullius myth of Israel, which is, you know, the earth was horrible and cracked when we got there. And, you know, so now for, you know, 60 years, we've been planting trees, and now Israel is beautiful and covered in trees, and we're renewing the earth. You know, meanwhile, of course, we know that in like bulldozing settlements, they up, you know, the Israeli Defense Force, you know, uproots and ruins olive trees and Palestinian olive groves all the time. And, you know, like Avi was describing, the sort of planting of trees is used as a method to erase the indigenous history of the land that, you know, on which Israel lies, you know. And it's not a completely non-Jewish indigenous history. That's not what I'm suggesting. But, you know, it's a recreationist national myth, basically, that the Jewish National Fund is using the holiday of Tu B'Shvat to promote. So, you know, it's just something that drives me nuts, makes me really angry. And I don't want to talk about it anymore, because we're using this opportunity to talk about the beautiful aspects of Tu B'Shvat. But, you know, we couldn't help talking about those sort of you know, difficult and angering aspects a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about some the beauty next week too.
Yeah. And we still have some time left on the show, and which means there's also time left to call in and donate 533-CFRC.
Nice one.
Thank you. But when we come back, we will be talking about the Tu B'Shvat Seder that we'll be doing, and some of the stages that the Kabbalists developed for the Tu B'Shvat Seder. So stay tuned to Radio 613 here on CFRC 101.9 FM, and please keep supporting community radio with your donations.
Yeah. Sublime World. Yeah. What is the world coming to? The way I feel about my life right now is as if I don't do something quick that I might end up sick or homicidal. Appreciate the blessings lingering in my vibrato. Administrate the lessons I'm singing in my recital. Give it another title, call it the daily bread. A special formula you fix to get the baby fed. It's brain food that kind of ooze into a baby's head, so he won't be misled. And when the baby's dead, bury it where they bury cherry pits to grow a tree up. They cutting down the rainforest, looking for space to free up. And paving paradise with parking lots where buildings be up. What is the world coming to? It's really messing me up. I got a brand new nephew in about a year. His lungs will be older than he is from the cloudy air. Not saying cloudy like the molecules of H2O. I'm talking about the factories and fumes, whatever you know. And every time I'm driving, I'm thinking I'm such a coolo. My contribution to pollution isn't very cool though. But what am I to do though? I gotta work to live. And if I happen to be living where my working is, then will I ever learn to celebrate it for my kids? One day I'll have them maybe, but first I need a lady. And will I give her all my time, and will she really love me? And will she give me shelter when the storms are up above me? I know sometimes it be my personality is ugly, and no amount of makeup can make up for that. But now I recognize the game, and when I'm up to bat, I'm gonna put a little change change it to the thinking cap. Because to change the world, you gotta change your mind. We can't go on living wrong inside of the same design. It gotta be that you and me agree to make a difference. Put up a canvas and manipulate the color pigments to paint a portrait of tomorrow full of all the figments in your imagination. Could you imagine nations at peace and harmony instead of genocidal warring? When borders don't exist and nobody's considered foreign. Mother Earth is respected, animals are protected, society perfected, capitalism's rejected. What is the world coming to? Almost the end of us. And it's the evils in the world today pretend to trust. How could we let the ashes crumble till they come to dust? I guess that's what is meant to happen if you're blind enough. If you're ready for what is coming, then come on with me. Follow my voice if you can hear it. Let the song lift me into the graces of heaven's hugs to learn love's embrace and share with every beautiful face. I place my right hand on my heart and say, let me be the start. I pound my fist on my chest and request, allow me to be the test. And when I'm at my best, I can make a Catholic priest confess. Cause guilt is worse than the parasite that is flesh. And the flesh is weak, but the pride is stronger. It can make a little lie last a little bit longer than it was ever intended by whomever intended to send it. Watch the evil manifest that it rendered. And I hope you remember your place in this. Look about a shooting star, go ahead and make a wish. Hopefully it will be granted by the gods. Against all odds, you'll be wise enough to see through the facades. What is the world coming to? I wish I had an answer. Better than seeing human beings as a living cancer. Better than being what I'm seeing, hope I have a chance to raise the consciousness. Peace, y'all, and God bless. Blind world.
Okay, that's Allo Black and Blind World here on Radio 613, broadcasting on CFRC 101.9 FM, 90.9 on cable, and online at cfrc.ca. And we thank you again for your calls and your pledges.
Thank you so much to Martha Plain for her very generous donation.
Of
$100.
That's right.
Ooh, that's super generous and so great. And, you know, that should rouse all of you and Martha's fellow listeners to, you know, emulate her good act and call in and donate too. So if you haven't heard it yet, it's 613-533-CFRC. We're here on the air now for another 7 minutes. So, you know, that should be enough time for at least 3 phone calls.
At least.
So don't hesitate.
Three phone calls in 4 worlds. We also have 7 minutes to talk about the 4 worlds. Sean.
7 minutes. 4 worlds. This is a little much. Okay. So anyways, in this sort of, this Haggadah for the Tu Bishvat Seder, it comes from Kabbalist tradition. Rabbi Luria, who's from Palestine in the 17th century, I believe it's the 17th century, sort of put together a Kabbalist interpretation of Tu Bishvat, using Kabbalist interpretation of the different worlds or different spheres of reality in the way that humans interact with the environment, and in that sense, it also relates to the 4 seasons. But anyway, so the first world is Olam HaAsiya, which is the world of action. So basically, this is where we do things like make buildings, shape artifacts. We take things from the physical world and we make stuff. And this is related specifically to winter and a time of sleep. And within the Seder, it's also the time that you think about eating nuts that have hard coverings, you know, almost like a hibernation stage. And I guess maybe, I don't know how to interpret it, but maybe the reason that the world of action and winter, when you think the least action is happening in winter, but there's always some like amazingly beautiful twist within Kabbalah. So probably has something to do with the things are actually happening during winter, but you don't see them. But I'm not really sure. Anyway, so you drink white wine, which is associated with snow. The second world is Olam HaYetzira. It's the world of formation. And so this is where you start to see things transform. You're starting to see the gradual waking up out of winter. So we're talking about spring, basically. And so you have like white wine with a dash of red wine. And they talk about that being the gradual deepening of color, the reawakening of color in nature within the spring period. And it doesn't say this here, but I could also think out of my own mind, you see that white wine with a dash of red color. It also could be interpreted as basically an egg that's been, fertilized. So like spring period, the renewal period. So then you got the third world, which is Olam Habriya, which is a world of creation. And so that's the summer. And you start to see everything's growing up, everything's starting to grow. This is where you eat fruits that are edible without having much trouble. Everything's easy. You drink red wine with a dash of white wine in it. And then in the fourth world, it's Olam Ha'atzulet, the world of emanation. And so this is basically the harvest period, fall, when everything is finished, everything is complete, and you're drinking that pure red wine. Things are healthy, trees are healthy, and the world is healthy, and that's the sort of end stage. So those are the four worlds. There's a lot more going on in that, obviously, but this is just a taste of what a Tu B'Shvat Seder is.
And the three of us and some friends of ours will be celebrating our very first Tu B'Shvat Seder this coming Sunday evening. And, you know, I guess we'll be working on making that happen in the next few days. So, you know, we'll have more to share with you. But we're just running out of time on the show. So thanks so much for tuning in. Keep listening to great CFRC programming during this week and keep those donations coming in, 613-533-CFRC.
CFRC needs money.
That was so good, Sean.
It was.
Like, we need trees. See if, why wasn't that used as a campaign?
Get paper.
Post-consumer paper. So, yeah, thanks everyone for calling in and donating. And Tu B'Shvat Sameach. And tune in next week to Radio 613.
Have a great week.
See ya.